Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
Open your ring if you gotta show your bling and tune in to the ship where we talk about it, man. But if you tune in, you better know it's showtime. And every time he speak, man, he gonna speak his mind, keeping the straight facts while others they just assume. We're keeping it 100 while faking there's no room, with the loudest interviews and the hottest guests. You done dealt with the rest, now roll with the best. But before I forget, let me get back to the script, introduce you to the host of the ship, Darren Smith.
Welcome to the ship here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Darren Smith with you live in studio. Thank you so much for tuning in, either via the radio or online at 810WHB.com or even our station mobile app. It is Sunday. It is the day that the Lord has made, and I would ask if there's been any news that has transpired recently, but I guess I would be being facetious if that were the case. But with me, as always, we got our guy Blake Schneiders keeping us on the air. Blake, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mr. Smith. How are we doing today on this glorious Sunday?
I'm doing good. Thankfully, I don't have a uterus, but that's for another conversation another day. With us, as always, Michael Coleman. He is the sports director for KLTV ABC 7. Michael, good morning to you.
Good morning, man. How y'all doing today?
Doing well, doing well. And last but certainly not least, we have the man who is on vacation but makes time for, you know, yours truly. When you can get a man off of vacation to spend a half hour with you, you know you're doing something right in life. We got with us, he writes for the NFL along with covering the NFL for the NFL Network, our good friend Jeff Chedid. Jeff, good morning to you.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Doing well, doing well. How was Juneteenth for you last week, Jeff?
It was good because I was sleeping in, and then I went watch my son play baseball.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. Hey, look, man. First and foremost, look, we want to thank you for taking time out of your schedule to join us this morning. But want to just jump right into things, and we'll talk about some of the biggest news later on this week. But looking at the Kansas City Chiefs, I know it's one of the main teams that you focus along with the rest of the NFL, but as they prepare to go into training camp, what do you think the biggest storyline or the biggest question marks that you see Kansas City hoping to address either with training camp or this upcoming football season?
Oh, well, like every team, they've got, you know, a number of questions they got to figure out. First of all, they've got to figure out life without Tyreek Hill, a number of new receivers in that receiver room. So you're going to have to figure out that chemistry with Patrick Mahomes and how that's going to work. I think that obviously left tackle is a big question mark that will be, or it's a question that we'll have more clarity on come July 15th when the franchise tag deadline arrives, and we'll see where they're at with Orlando Brown Jr. If they're able to get a long-term deal done with him, or if he's going to end up playing on that tag or holding out. And then the defense. Got a number of new faces on defense that struggled at various times last season. You know, you got obviously George Karlaftis coming in at defensive end, and Trent McDuffie at corner, and Justin Reed at safety. So they've got to figure that out as well. So I think those are the three biggest areas that I see they got to answer in training camp.
I know you're a Big Ten guy, but and I think this is our first conversation, at least on the air, that we've had as it relates to what the Chiefs did in the draft. Are you impressed with what they did? And does anything stand out with George Karlaftis? Because look, maybe it's just me. I'm just still waiting to, you know, obviously in a wait and see position. But is he worth the hype that the Chiefs are putting out on him?
Well, like all rookies, you don't know what you have until they're actually playing football. And on paper, it looks good. I like the players they drafted. They certainly went after a certain style of player in terms of not just talent, but in terms of character and work ethic. I think that was important to them as they try to rebuild this defense. And so, but yeah, it's to ask George Karlaftis to come in here and have 15 sacks, or, you know, I'm not expecting that. But I do think that the energy, the motor, all those things are real. And he'll be one piece to what they hope can be a better defensive line.
Mike, go ahead.
JC, how you doing, man? It's good talking to you, brother.
Good, good, man. Good to see you too, man. You sound like a little far away, but I know that you're always close at heart, so it's good to hear your voice.
Hey, let me ask you this. I'm gonna go the route of Deshaun Watson. Is there going to be distractions throughout the NFL season because there's going to be updates regarding Daniel Snyder, regarding Deshaun Watson, and that whole situation right there? I think it's going to be a different kind of NFL season because some of these news events will get airplay just by mere fact of what's going on. And for Cleveland, are their backs against the wall?
Well, I think to answer the first part of the question, yeah, I mean, there's always going to be some level of off-the-field things happening in the NFL. And historically, what I've seen is that once you start playing games, those distractions become less of an issue because, you know, you have to go play football. And people care more about that. And, you know, a perfect example of that is the Las Vegas Raiders last year. Lost their head coach in a particularly scandalous situation, and lost one of their best receivers in a horrible, tragic situation. And, you know, life went on. And you hate to put it in that context, but, you know, people do have to keep playing football even when bad things are happening. So I do believe the Daniel Snyder stuff, the Deshaun Watson stuff will get a lot of attention in July and August, but come September, it'll be back to football as usual. And in terms of Cleveland, yeah, their backs are against the wall. But I do believe that they have a lot of faith in the due diligence they did with Deshaun Watson. I know a lot of people who know Deshaun Watson who have talked to me about him as a person before this stuff happened. And this, to me, would be like Patrick Mahomes landing in this kind of situation. That's how highly thought of Deshaun Watson was before all these allegations came down. So, you know, their backs against the wall in terms of having to go out and win a championship or have to deal with the decision they made with Deshaun Watson. I think in time they will be a really good football team with him as their quarterback, and in time he'll get past this stuff and move on and get back to playing football as well.
Well, shout out to Michael Coleman for just skipping foreplay altogether, but he decided to go
right in there.
Right, since he just jumped right in there. Well, I guess I'll follow up on that because I was going to ease into that, but that's going to be another conversation for another show. But that being the case, look, when you look at this Deshaun Watson, I guess the hearing is going to take place Tuesday, they say, and I don't know. I've been one of his biggest fans, as both you all know. And of course, even with what's going on this week, I'm not a proponent of a quote unquote year. I know that's what the NFL is pushing for. Look, I wasn't a proponent for suspending Calvin Ridley for a year, so I try to be consistent in that. But a lot of what people are missing is what the NFL Players Association and their defense is going to be now, how it holds up, and what the, you know, what the U.S. District Judge that's going to, or former U.S. District Judge is going to be hearing the case and perhaps even the appeal. I'm curious to your thoughts, Jeff, and Mike, you can chime in if you like, but you know, people are missing the point where they're just presuming that, you know, he's just guilty and that the NFL should just go on with this suspension, but they're not looking at other precedents. And, you know, obviously being accused of sexual misconduct versus sexual harassment and rape and that other players have been accused of versus what, you know, some of the owners, the voyeurism with Jerry Jones, obviously Dan Snyder in the workplace environment. And then you look at Bob Kraft, who, you know, on the day of the AFC Championship game against Kansas City in 2018 was found. And I can't remember if he was arrested or not in that sting operation that they had going on at the massage parlor down in Miami. But you look at that's the defense that the NFL Players Association is going to go all out and defend Deshaun Watson, is that if you say in your collective bargain agreement that the owners are to be held to a higher standard than the players, and yet these owners don't get suspended. Now, they, you know, the league might try to say something about Dan Snyder and his quote unquote being removed, but that will have to come out when it comes to what they allow to be used for discovery evidence or investigate, you know, for the Players Association. But do you see a scenario where the Players Association and their defense of Deshaun Watson can actually help him avoid suspension or at least lessen the time that the NFL is hoping that he receives?
Yeah, I mean, look, it gets kind of complicated at this stage of the process for various reasons. One is that the league certainly wants to look like they're being very tough on situations like this, given what happened years ago with Ray Rice. And since that time, they tried to be much harder on people who, you know, fall foul of these kinds of situations with sexual or misconduct, harassment, domestic violence. I think they're all in the same boat as far as the NFL is concerned.
But only on the right. Players. Only on the players and not the owners.
Yeah, but that's what I was going to say. Yeah, I think, you know, you raised a good point. Bob Kraft was arrested in that thing back in Florida a few years ago. The prosecutor eventually dropped the charges. And so there is some level of precedent here. And even within the criminal justice system, I'm one of those people who believe that if it's not a criminal case you're talking about now, and Sean Watson's faced two different grand juries and not had the case proceed, I think that matters. Exactly. When you start getting into a situation where it's a civil matter, and you're not, it's basically a he said, she said, and you're not really clear about what happened. I don't know how fair it is to say we're going to banish somebody for a year just based off allegations. I don't know how fair it is to say you're going to ban somebody for a year based off a much lower threshold of evidence being brought forth. And so, you know, some cases that have been settled now. And so who knows exactly where the truth lies, because you're not going to be able to get those people who made those accusations, at least those 20 women who settled, to be able to come forward and tell you exactly what happened now. So a lot of different things on the table there as far as evidence and accusations. But ultimately, I think he'll play football this year. I think it'll come down to probably a 6-game suspension, which has kind of been the go-to route for these kind of cases, and people will all move forward.
Well, in a few times, I wish this stuff was televised. They televise everything else. Mike, go ahead.
Well, and I think the leverage to what JC is saying, I think the leverage is those two juries here in Texas. I mean, they don't always get it right in Texas, but I know folks here who are Texans are upset about it. It's like, wait a minute now. You know, he went through the process, and this is what they came back with. How are you going to be upset at that? You know, because trust me, if it was a Dallas Cowboy, they wouldn't be upset about it at all. I can tell you that for sure. And so I just think that's the leverage and something I've been harping on for quite some time. Until some woman says he held me against my will, I like JC said. Now, I just read that they're going to try to go for a 1-year suspension. I'm like, I don't think they can do that. And I think the union will stand up for him on that. It should be commensurate with what everybody else has had to do, you know. And when you have the Dan Snyder situation hanging over your head, and to a lesser degree, Rich Dalrymple of the Dallas Cowboys, their PR guy, who was videotaping the cheerleaders in their locker room, and they were paid for something that didn't happen, air quotes. You know, I just think there's just too many other issues out there that were settled the way they were to be such heavy-handed, to be so heavy-handed on Deshaun that I don't think it's going to fly.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that's the point I was trying to make, was that I think the league, by saying we want to have a 1-year suspension, that's the message they're trying to send to the public, that we don't condone this stuff, we're not behind it. But ultimately, the mistake they made with Ray Rice was saying, this is what happened, here's what we saw, here's what we think, and here's 2 games. And as soon as that blew up in their face, it was like, well, how could you do this? How could you do that? And then he was done for the rest of his career. They don't ever want to make the mistake of trying to pinpoint exactly what they think the punishment should be. They want to say what they don't condone, have somebody else decide what it should be, and then move forward.
Jeff, one of the questions that I have, and look, I mean, you know, speak on it if you like, but and Mike knows we've talked about it over the last 2-3 weeks, and I know Stephen A. has brought it up even on this show, bigger platform, not going to complain about it, but the NFL seems to have this investigation going much longer than what law enforcement and everybody else does. So what exactly are you investigating, and how is it you're coming up with something to where you can feel like you can, you know, suspend this guy and take away his chance to make money versus what law enforcement and what they were able to find. And like we mentioned before, if two grand juries cannot or feel like, you know, they can't proceed because they may feel like they can't, you know, there's not enough evidence or that they can't win a case against Deshaun Watson, what exactly is the NFL, quote unquote, investigator that they're supposedly finding out that nobody else seems to be able to do?
Well, I don't know so much if they're trying to find out things that other people couldn't find out. I think it's more they didn't have access, from what I understand, to some of these people during the criminal process. Like a lot of these women, were not being cooperative with the NFL investigators when they were going through the criminal process.
And well, so my guess is technically they don't have to be either because, you know, they're not law enforcement.
Yeah, exactly. But I think now there may be more opportunities to go back and say, hey, this has been resolved. You've settled. Can we talk to you now? I mean, it's a lot of people involved in this investigation. And let's not forget, the Houston Texans, no one brings this up, but they were helping him get the women.
Oh, no. We talked about that. We've been talking about that because they were, I mean, they had the hotel room. I mean, I think the director of security was the one that you know, had Deshaun Watson. Have the women sign NDAs. So,
right.
I mean, that's...
Yeah, so
they live in large. They live in large.
Yeah, a lot of different things. What's that, Michael?
No, I said they were living large, you know, and maybe that's why they weren't being cooperative, because they were taking advantage of an opportunity. You know, they were feeling like Cinderellas. You know, they were being hooked up.
And Jeff, the biggest issue that I have, and for me, especially if I'm an NFLPA, none of this came out until Deshaun Watson opened up his mouth and said he wanted to leave Houston.
Yeah. No, that, trust me, from day one, that's always been part of the conversation as far as I'm concerned, that the timing of it is very strange. That, and look, I've covered the NFL for 25 years. You know this, Michael knows this. A lot of things happen behind the scenes in the NFL that teams are very much aware of, that teams are able to keep from becoming public matters. And so, yeah, it does not surprise me at all that now we're becoming aware of the Houston Texans, playing a role in this, helping him. Because I'm sure they knew about it. I'm sure that there was some reason for this stuff getting out after he decided he didn't want to be there, had gotten sideways with the organization. And so... Yeah, it smells funny. To answer your question, yeah, it smells really funny.
Jeff, as it relates to the NFL and obviously personal conduct, there were reports that Alvin Kamara is obviously expecting a 6-game suspension, you know, for his actions during the Pro Bowl, if I remember correctly, because I was in Vegas at the time when that took place. At the Pro Bowl, I think he got into an altercation at one of the casinos. He's looking at 6-game suspension, but it's been real quiet, and I know I've had a quote-unquote talking to with people, with members of the Chiefs PR, but Frank Clark, we still have not heard anything as it relates to his situation in California and whether or not the league is going to take action against Frank Clark. So is that should also be another concern that Kansas City should be concerned about it as they head into the season?
Well, yeah, it's still lingering out there. I mean, there's still felony charges. As far as I know, I haven't heard anything about charges getting knocked down, and I'd be surprised if they did get knocked down to misdemeanor charges, because California has very strict gun laws.
Very strict.
But the other side of this too is that California has a lot bigger issues in their court systems to deal with than gun possession, and so it's sometimes gonna be very hard. Especially keep in mind this stuff happened in the midst of pandemic shutdowns and, you know, courts being closed off, government offices not being able to be access, so I'm
so
sure
did Deshaun Watson's. So did Deshaun Watson's. That ain't no excuse.
Yeah, well, in Texas, a little different story. Michael knows that down there. I think that's the issue here. I mean, at some point, he'll have to go in front of a judge and explain himself and deal with prosecution. But yeah, I think it may not happen this year. Sometimes it takes a long time to try this stuff, but at some point, I would think he'd have to face some kind of punishment from the league as well.
Okay. Jeff Tadeo, of course, joining us. He is an NFL reporter, an NFL writer for the NFL Network and NFL.com. Jeff, going back to the Kansas City Chiefs, you look at Patrick Mahomes. I know we've talked about, you know, what the expectations of what he might be able to do with or without Tyreek Hill. How much pressure is it going to be on him to make sure that he elevates his receivers' play? Because I remember last year, and I know you were probably part of it, that Patrick said when he addressed the media after the Super Bowl loss that one of the things he wanted to do was become a more accurate and more consistent quarterback, you know, in the upcoming season. Whether or not the numbers, you know, show that, you know, that's debatable. But knowing that, like you said, you don't have Tyreek, but you do still have Travis Kelce, but you got players, you got, you know, draft picks that came in. How much pressure is going to be on Patrick Mahomes, especially, you know, when everybody, you know, kissed the ring of Patrick Mahomes and that say he's the greatest ever? How much pressure is it going to be on Patrick to live up to the highest standards that he has for himself to make sure that not only Travis Kelce still becomes that Pro Bowl tight end or All-Pro tight end, but you elevate your receivers to where, you know, to where Kansas City can, you know, make a run in the playoffs again?
Well, there's always going to be pressure on guys like Patrick Mahomes or Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady. It just takes a different form every year. So I don't think that he's got to become a better quarterback because Tyreek Hill isn't there. He's got to become a different kind of quarterback. And the thing about Mahomes that people will tell you is that he's never been somebody who's been great throwing on time. He likes to, you know, likes to extend plays. He likes to get a little bit greedy, as he once said, after a game, and that can be his undoing sometimes. He can create a lot of big things, but he can also create problems for himself.
AFC Championship game.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that's really the challenge for him, is being able to be more disciplined in that regard, because you don't have – Tyreek Hill was a great security blanket. All else failed, throw the football down there and find him. And Tyreek Hill made a ton of plays for this team. It's Patrick Mahomes, and they made magic happen plenty of times. But now with the Juju Smith-Schusters and the Marquez Valdez-Scantlings and the Sky Moores and people like that, it's going to be a lot more about throwing on time, running the play as it's scripted. If you have to go off script, that's fine. But they're going to ask him to be more of what you see from Tom Brady, more of what you see from Aaron Rodgers, more of what you see from all these guys. Because inevitably what happens when in this league, when you start making more money as a quarterback, you don't get to have all the toys anymore. And you have to make the toys you have work better. You know, it's like you can't have the Hot Wheels and the Hot Wheels track and all the cool ramps and everything else. You gotta go outside and build your own ramps. You know, you gotta take some sticks and some stones and turn to make some obstacle courses and things like that. So I think he's got talent in the room, but he's got, yeah, as you said, he's gotta make those guys better.
Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, well, yeah, and I think to Jeff's point is he can't be as freewheeling as he has in the past. He's had to learn how to do it a different way, and I think he will. I mean, as far as pressure, they all feel pressure. You know, it's just a matter of who rises to the top, and I don't think we've ever seen. No, I can't say that because there was some frustration in that game against Cincinnati, of course. But I just think it's a whole different chapter for him, and he realizes it. And I think the Chiefs have found. Or like all teams, all great teams do. You don't always win the same way because you lose your weapons or you lose your guys on either side of the ball. So you have to reinvent yourself. But the key factor is you got a resume. And you come in having an idea of what you can no longer do. But let's go ahead and utilize what we have. I'm really excited about this offense. I just think they're going to find a different way to win. You know, I think they should, and I think they will. I think they're going to run the ball a little bit more, you know, for a little ball control and whatnot. And so I think as far as pressure, I guess it's pressure, but guys that like to be in that hot skillet, they don't mind the pressure because they don't mind letting you know they can pull it off.
See, I'll be the first to say, I don't, you know, I like the idea of them running the football, but we both know that that is not in Andy Reid's DNA. I think at the, you know, at his core, no matter what, they could have a 42-0 lead. He'll still want to throw the ball so Patrick can have those numbers. I mean, we've seen, because if that's the case, they never would have lost that game in the AFC Championship game. But that's neither here nor there. But that being the case, I do want to ask, Jeff, before we get you out of here, I got a couple questions for you. One, with all the moves that have been made in the AFC, which of course you know, you bring Russell Wilson over, he's in Denver. You add Devontae Adams to an already playoff team with the Raiders. Obviously, they get Khalil Mack back in LA, but of course he's with the Chargers. How do you see the AFC playing out this upcoming season?
It's gonna be a challenge.
Yeah.
For everybody. There's 12 teams in there that legitimately can make the playoffs. And I've gone through this exercise a few times already in the last month or two in terms of trying to figure out and being asked this question and trying to figure out who I like, and it tends to change.
Yeah, 'cause you know it's coming.
Yeah, you know it's coming. But, you know, a lot of it, Deshaun Watson is a factor in it, too. We talked
exactly.
about it earlier.
Exactly.
Where he's going to be, Lamar Jackson. So my guess is that you'll probably see I feel like Buffalo is – pretty strong, easy choice in the East. I feel like Indianapolis is going to win the South, and then from there, it's a matter of which teams win the North and the West, and which wild card team come out of there. I kind of feel like you're probably going to get two wild card teams out of the West and maybe one out of the North now. But it's tough, you know. I think it's Deshaun Watson misses six games. I can see Cleveland not making the playoffs, and that would be Cincinnati and Baltimore come out of the North. I feel like the Chargers are going to win the West. I think the Chargers are the best team in the West on paper right now, and then you got the Chiefs and the Broncos making the playoffs out of that. I think the West obviously is the best division in football, but they're going to beat themselves up, and it's going to be tough. I mean, I look at Tennessee, I look at the Dolphins, I look at Cleveland, I look at even New England who was in the playoffs. Like all these teams, if things go right, could be there as well.
You know, and Mike, I'm going to actually let you get the last question, Jeff. But it's interesting because when you look at it, like you said, there's so much. And this is the beauty about the offseason in the NFL. Like, it's so many storylines that you can't wait to see how it plays out. But then once you get on the field, you're like, well, damn, I waited all offseason for this. And so last year, Mike, was the first year that Jeff and I had a wash. Now, this would have been the first time I would have beaten Jeff, but, you know, Patrick Mahomes in that second half had different ideas for him in the AFC Championship game. So, Jeff, we can have this conversation now. We can have this conversation once the season begins.
I want you to explain it well, detail it well for Michael, because Michael wasn't there. I was explaining to Michael because I've taken a couple bets off.
Hold on. Now, Jeff, now you know I am not a liar, so I will explain it. Mike, the last three seasons, including last year, I've had the Chiefs. Well, 2 years ago, I think I had the Chiefs going 19-0. The year they lost.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah. So yeah, he got two meals off me because said they were going to go 19-0. They could have look the Chiefs blew it. The refs had something to do with them having two touchdowns called back against the Raiders at home, and then of course the Chiefs, when they lost their game, they lost the last game against the Chargers. It didn't matter, but they you know, I lost that, and then but also the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, and I had them at the time winning against Tampa Bay. They lost in Tampa. We were all there. They lost to Tampa Bay. So he got two meals on me that last year though was my year of redemption. I had Kansas City going back to the Super Bowl, at least making it to the Super Bowl, and Jeff had Baltimore. Well, no. You had Cleveland, didn't you?
I had Cleveland, yeah. Michael, the whole point was we were going to make the bet again. I said, you like the Chiefs again? He's like, I do. But who do you like? You got to pick somebody this time.
Yeah, he said,
I take Cleveland. And so all year when Cleveland got eliminated in the playoffs, he was feeling good. And then we got to the Buffalo game.
He said, double or nothing.
Double or nothing. I said, after that game, double or nothing. And he said, I'll take it.
Right before kickoff, too.
The AFC Championship game. So at halftime, he came running over to me.
No. Well, I was gonna say the Buffalo was obviously right before the AFC conference or whatever they call it.
Divisional.
And then of course we got to the AFC championship game, and yes, Kansas City was up 21-3. I went down. I went down to him after. I said, "Ooh, I'm gonna be eating some good Wagyu steak off of the NFL paycheck." And then
he didn't just come down. He came running down.
Alligator
took it himself with some cold slaw and mac and cheese on the side like he was about to eat forever. And I said, "All right, let's see what happened." And then all of a sudden, that game ended.
Jeff's ass came walking up the steps, tapped on the shoulder like, "You still hungry?" And I was like, "Make it the hell out of my death." Hey, man, I tell you, man, if there's anybody that I love making bets with, that if I have to lose a bet, I at least want to lose it like that, where where one, I ain't spending no money because one, I was already up 1-0, hoping that the Chiefs were gonna make it in that double or nothing. I was like, well, damn, I could actually be tied with Jeff at the end of this game. Lo and behold, again, Patrick, whatever happened, they just didn't want to run the ball. They just got greedy. And so Jeff,
I know, it was the first shot I ever had parking lot that night was Darren.
I was hot. It's funny because I don't think I was not on the post game press because I was so pissed at Jeff. I was so pissed at Jeff didn't have to pay that I was pissed at Pat. And then I was like, I can't be on this. I can't be on the Zoom call because, like they cost me 2 steak dinners from Jeff. I couldn't do it. So, Mike, I'm going to let you get the last question before we get out of here.
Well, hey, listen. Hey, Jeff, I just paid off a slab of rib bets with him last week when I was in KC. So, he goads me into betting him. And then it's not even a 50-50. Because when he's feeling their zone, you can just forget it. Wrapping things up right here with you. Let me ask you about the fact that back to Cleveland. What's Baker Mayfield going to do?
Whatever he's told.
Well, I think he's got a lot more options now that Cleveland's willing to pay half his salary, which was always the issue that the Browns didn't want to take that cost. They thought they could move him. They thought there'd be some desperation there, and. I think Baker Mayfield in the right situation could be a nice comeback story, productive player. I think it's either going to be Carolina or Seattle. There's a lot more motivation now that his price tag has gone down. If I were him, I'd probably prefer to be in someplace like Seattle where you have more of a more of a stable environment. The coaching staff, I assume Matt Rule's probably going to get fired after this year at Carolina. But, and you also don't have a quarterback they drafted. So you're talking about competing with Drew Locke and Geno Smith for a job. But to get him into a place where he's able to have a good run game, a more conservative offense, not asking him to play like Patrick Mahomes or Aaron Rodgers, that could be a good thing for him. So I would not be surprised if Seattle pulled the trigger and made that deal and brought him into the mix.
Jeff Chedea, of course, you can catch him on the NFL Network. He is an NFL reporter and writer for the NFL and NFL.com, as well as the NFL Network. Jeff, as always, thank you so very much, man. We will get together for lunch, and I might even treat this time around. So since I don't owe you anything.
That's all right. You always treat. That's what I'm
going to do.
I
am going to. okay. That's a good one. I'll walk right into that. Hey, Jeff, thank you so much, man. Enjoy the rest of your vacation, man. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right.
Good talking to you, Jeff. Take care, buddy.
Take care.
All right. When we come back, we'll talk Title IX, 50th anniversary of Title IX. We'll talk to a coach, a JUCO women's national champion coach out of Tyler, Texas. When we come back here on The Ship on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Solomon Wilcots of PFF and Sirius XM NFL Radio, and you're listening to The Ship with Darren Smith on Sports Radio 810 WHB and ESPN Kansas City.
This is Doug Gottlieb with The Doug Gottlieb Show, and you're listening to The Ship with Darren Smith on Sports Radio 810 WHB
Kansas City.
Welcome back to the ship with Darren Smith here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, 810WHB.com, station mobile app. Thanks once again to our good friend, Jeff Chedia. Make sure you follow him on all social media platforms. We're back once again with Michael Coleman. And Michael, we have a special guest that I'm going to allow you to do the introductions on.
All right, yeah, because I read your text late. Anyway.
As usual.
Yeah, hey, you know, we have joining us, who's just across town from me, Trina Tillis Horde, the coach of the national champions TJC Apache Ladies basketball team. And they pulled off a big big win back at during March Madness. They played in the first game, they played in the last game, and it was complete euphoria. And this team, they didn't have a great, and she'll tell you this, they didn't have a great stretch down the stretch of the season, but they got in. And once they got in, they kicked the door down. Folks, meet my good friend and a great coach, Coach Trina Tillis Horde. Coach, how you doing today?
I'm great. How's everyone on a Sunday?
Good, good, good. Thank you so much for joining us today. And, you know, as Mike told you, obviously, before we got you on the call, one reason why we wanted to have you on was, of course, this is the 50th anniversary of Title IX, and obviously, you know, someone like myself and Mike, who are big supporters of women in sports and their activities, and also, you know, big supporters of Title IX as well. What do you feel that Title IX has meant to women in this country with the great strides that it has made when it was first instituted?
I felt like it opened up opportunities for female athletes in sports. Something that hadn't existed. And if at that time they wanted to create the opportunities, it would have been created. But the problem was nobody was willing to do it. So the federal government had to step in and create legislative action to make that happen.
Go ahead, Mike.
And Coach, how apropos that your team wins the national championship in year 50 of Title IX. And let me express, Darren, she has, you know how, you know, Coach Reed or even Coach Walsh back in the day had a coaching tree. I mean, she got a bunch of branches out there, let me tell you. And not just coaching on the floor, but also in administration. And so, Coach, let me ask you this. When you see the strides that have been made, and let me also acknowledge, these are black women who are doing tremendous things in the front office of administration of colleges and on the floor of coaching. Is it a bright future, or is there going to be a standstill because of all the politics of what's took place here lately? And I'm talking specifically about abortions, but it does affect women's rights.
It really does. I mean, there's so much that's going on right now. We've got a hotbed of conversation going on because while Title IX opened up opportunities, you're talking about 50 years later, African-American females are just now getting their opportunity to coach at the highest level. And we are still, I mean, just the fact that I've been at Tyler's for 23 years and to just have the first female black coach to win a national title, that means we've come a long way, but we haven't come far enough. And then now with these changes where the government, the Supreme Court has taken away women's choices or right to a choice, where are we going to go now? The question is in the air. Is Title IX next? Is gay marriage next? Is what they're trying to do with transgenders, is that next? So it's where is our legislation going? Where are our choices? But right now, while we have the opportunity for growth, I think we need to keep showcasing that opportunity and showing that you give us these opportunities, we can do great things with it.
I do have a question, and part of this could be part of my ignorance as it relates to Title IX when it relates to transgender athletes. I know that that's been a big deal in a lot of states, especially in high school, where state bodies are, you know, trying to implement things to where transgenders cannot, they don't allow them to play in women's sports. How does Title IX affect that? And you know, not that's what you said on that, but is that a big deal to where Title IX will be at risk because of, you know, these transgender laws where they're trying to keep those from competing in women's sports.
That's huge, because when you're in a situation where Title IX was created for opportunities. Now, if I can only give examples, but if a male can say, hey, I'm transgender, there's no way they're not going to dominate any female in any sports based on how their body is made, their genetics, their muscular endurance. Is it going to afford women opportunities, or is it going to take away opportunities for women? I know I'm on one extreme of that, and I am not for it just because it takes away opportunities for females, and it takes away opportunities for success. If you're talking about a female is supposed to defeat a male, let's just say at wrestling. That's the one we keep hearing about, wrestling and swimming. Can a female beat a male on a consistent basis? I'm not going to say not every time, but on a consistent basis. So I think we're going to take a step back if we start getting into that. But as we are talking about Title IX, that's something we're going to have to look at. I mean, and take a deep look at.
And a lot of people, you know, used to wonder, you know, the importance of it. Why is Title IX important, and why is it still relevant in today's age right now?
Well, pretty much it's just, I keep saying over and over, opportunities, equal treatment, it's a pinhole. It opened up a pinhole of opportunities for women. So now we're getting to coach. Now we're getting to play sports. Now we're getting to have our national championships. But we haven't come all the way. I mean, if you look at some things like the NCAA, at the tournament, we knew there was different tournament atmosphere for the women than there were for the men.
Yeah.
But we are better off than we were in the past. But just providing that equal treatment to all sexual genders, I mean, it's got to be there. Because if it's not there, the bias will come back and the exclusion will come back and we'll be denied benefits and, you know, that discrimination. And so you've got to have something out there that says, no, you can't do this. Now, you can find a wormhole. You can find a back end where it's not equal and it's not balanced. But it's there. If it weren't there, we'd be in trouble. We had a team in our conference, I'd prefer not to say the name, that all of a sudden, right after the season was over, they just got rid of women's basketball. Being that it was a numbers game, they could get rid of women's basketball and keep men's basketball because all they did was go under the loophole of Title IX. And it's still fairness. There's nothing you can do about it. It was fair, and it's still an equal amount of females in sports getting the opportunity.
One of the things, and Mike, I'll let you jump in after this, but one of the things that I know is that obviously Title IX doesn't address is equal pay, and of course that's a whole separate deal right there. but I bring that up because I saw a clip, and I can't remember if it was a 30 for 30 clip, but I saw a clip with Don Staley, who talked about going into the AD's office, but also because her agent had a relationship with the professional relationship with the athletic director of South Carolina, that she wanted to sit him out of this one and bring a lawyer in and demand equal pay. And I think, if I remember correctly, she has the equivalent of equal pay as it relates to how the contract is structured and the number of years or whatever. But you know, I've been a big proponent of that. She's one of the top three college coaches in basketball, period, whether it's male or female. And that includes Bill Self. That includes Geno R.M. out of UConn. And it's good to see that she is being paid, if not as much, if not more, than her male counterpart in South Carolina, because she actually has the rings to back it up.
Exactly. You have to do more to get more. When you're a female coach and you're female in athletics, you almost you have to do more to get more. And a male body, it's just the nature. It's the nature of our country. It's a male-dominated society where the male is going to get paid more for equal work. And so to have that body of work, she's got to have those national titles behind her. She's got to have the city behind her. She's got to have the fans behind her. Because if they're not behind her, pushing her forward and putting her into into the light and saying she deserves this, it's not going to come. They're just not going to say, hey, Dawn, you're great, and we're going to give you the same pay that we give our male coaches. It doesn't happen.
Mike, go ahead.
Well, on that same tip, say Gino Auriemma, I think I'm saying his last name correctly, for Connecticut. I mean, world-class program, and he's really built something there. If there is a woman in that spot and she does just half of what he's done, does she get paid a top salary, do you think?
Absolutely not. It's the Pat Summits. It's the Dawn Staley's. It's the Kim Mulkey's. But you can't get upset because at least we have, you know, let's say 3 to 5.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's funny because you touched on, like you said, there was a school in your conference that got rid of women's basketball. But I'm curious to where, and Mike, I'm just curious what you thought about, because I know we had this conversation a few weeks, maybe last month, Mike, where I believe it's at Grambling.
Volleyball team.
That's a women. I mean, that's a woman where they didn't get rid of the program, but she got rid of everybody that's on the team and their scholarship. So, and I think right now, I think that might be going to court in Louisiana. But, you know, but I just want people to know that, you know, it does kind of go both ways. It's not just where, you know, not just a male thing, but, you know, but there are times where you start to question things like, why are you letting everybody going off their scholarships to where now, you know, they can, you know, now these kids got to figure out how they're going to pay for school or what have you. And then if the school is responsible for return of scholarships, now you're going to cost the school more money because you don't want those players on your team. School's got to pay for them to come, and then you still got to turn around and field a team.
Well, I get it. And it's just from a coaching perspective. It's like I said earlier. For you as a coach to get recognition and what you're hired for, you sometimes got to do more to get more. Well, those players had the opportunity. They brought that lady in because they wanted change within their program. If nothing changes, nothing changes. So if she's playing with the same group of individuals that were not successful and didn't have a successful mindset and wasn't going in the direction that she needed the program to go because they didn't hire her to lose, she had to make changes coming in. Someone above her allowed that. She didn't just make that decision on her own. Someone allowed it, because if they didn't allow it, they'd have walked in and said, no, you can't do this, and we wouldn't be all over the news with it. So someone allowed it. And there, like I said earlier, loopholes. People are going to find loopholes that fits them. I feel like the lady, she wanted to come in and be successful, and probably with the clean slate and at the D1 level, it's hard to have a clean slate. And seeing these athletes didn't have a place to go or anything to do, there's something called the portal. These kids are living in it right now. And if they don't like the program and they didn't like her as a coach, they have the opportunity to quickly jump into the portal. But in saying she can't say, I want to start over, I want a clean slate, I don't know. It's twofold for me, but I lean towards the rationale of the coach, I guess because I am a coach.
Mike, any final questions before we get out of here?
When will we see a head coach of a female persuasion in the NBA? It's on the brink. At least we hear the talk about it. Do you think it could happen?
I am, 52 years old. I don't think I'll see it with my own eyes.
I side with her, Mike, on that one.
I really do. I don't think I'll see it with my own eyes. I mean, we've just had some legislation that tells me we're gonna have to be like a slingshot. We're gonna get pulled back to be propelled forward. So we got to get ready for the pullback and the possibilities. And then find ways and find loopholes and find avenues for us to be able to propel forward, because I think a lot is about to happen, probably in the next 10 years, and I do not think it's a woman being a head coach at the NBA level.
Well, Mike, I agree with her on that. I just don't see the NBA even that forward thinking, because at the end of the day, it's just not. But, Coach, really appreciate your time. Really appreciate the insight that you brought as it relates to Title IX and in the world of college women's sports. So thank you so much, and best of luck to you in defending a national title this year.
Thank you.
And Micah, stay with us. We'll be right back. When we come back, we'll be joined by Ashley Baker, Fox Sports 1340 AM reporter out of the DMV, joining us to talk more NFL and the NBA here on The Ship with Darren Smith on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Peter King of NBC Sports. You're listening to The Ship with Darren Smith on Sports Radio 810 WHB and ESPN Kansas City.